She hadn't realized how long it takes to become somebody else, or how lonely it can be living in a world not meant for you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you updates and reviews over the internet and TikTok's favorite books that they keep recommending you. Everyone's talking about it. And we're here to tell you if they're actually worth a read, especially if you're busy. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. For episode 13, we are tackling a book that was published in 2020 and has been like steadily popular since, and is now being adapted into a limited series. And so we are discussing The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. So this book is full of a lot of time jumps and perspective changes, but we start in like the 50s, desegregation is happening, and it starts with the Vignes sisters. They're twins, and it's kind of a mystery about where the twins have gone. They left their small town, and it kind of starts looking into the mystery of where the two twins have gone. And then eventually follows through kind of their family trees and happenings in their lives and lives of the people around, their connection, their community. And it's actually really hard to summarize without giving away a lot because it jumps around in time and perspective so much. So if you want to know what happens with the Vignes sisters, two Black women, light-skinned Black women growing up in the desegregation era, that's where we start.
Nice.
That was not nice, but I don't know how to summarize this book without ruining the whole thing.
It's a generational book about a generation of women and their families growing up in a very racist era.
Yeah. And how they deal with being light-skinned women who are interpreted as white to strangers, but grew up culturally Black. And it gets really complicated.
We tackle a lot of issues.
This is a niche Black experience, I believe. As a white person, I am saying that, but there's some unique stuff in here.
Yeah, it's a lot about identity. So with that, do we want to start with our Goodreads reviews, or not our Goodreads reviews, our book reviews?
You go first. You seem excited.
It actually took me a long time to find sort of like a short, funny review of this book. But I went with a 3-star review on Google, and it's one line, not even really a complete sentence. Difficult to read someone live their entire life as a lie, period. And I was like, yeah, that sums up the book.
I was going to say, maybe we should have let them summarize the book. Okay, I also picked a 3-star review. It's from Storygraph user Ashley Jewell. I definitely enjoyed reading this book, but for me at least, it did not live up to the hype. I kept wanting more, some twist or shocking surprise, but you pretty much know the surprise from the beginning, and nothing drastic happens after that. It was a good book, but it was not as suspenseful or introspective as I was hoping. And you know me, I love plot twists and exciting things. So I kind of related to this review.
I mean, yeah, we already know that from previous episodes from you, but like, this isn't a book of plot twists. Like, I don't think I predicted the ending because there wasn't an ending to predict. If you know what I mean.
That's kind of, we'll talk about why I'm at a similar rating, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I, in my own ways, I chose a 5-star review because it more aligned with my review of the book. And I thought this was like, basically when I read it, this is what I thought of the book. So this is Cindy. She is a 5-star review on Goodreads. And she said, although the first third of the book was slow, once we start to see how two generations diverge and they connect later on, I became invested in each person's individual journeys as they grappled with race, loneliness, colorism, abuse, motherhood, and a sense of identity. I enjoyed reading about these women and also adored the male side characters. Reese made me so soft. It's a poignant and lovely story that takes you through several lifetimes with empathy and hope. And Reese was my favorite character, so that's why I was like, Reese.
Shocker, Catherine's favorite character is named Reese.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, I did not even connect that at all.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked the book. It just talks about so much, which we've kind of already alluded to. It's hard to even like summarize what it's about or like say what part or what I thought about it, because it's just like, I don't know, there was so much.
It hits on, let's see, racism, segregation, white passing, LGBTQ and transgender issues in an era where that was still kind of taboo. There are drag queens in this book. Hello.
Women's issues and their place in society.
Yeah.
Right. Very, yeah, you know, poverty versus wealth.
There's generational trauma.
Women in college, like.
Yeah. Identity and what it means to be you, what makes you who you really are.
Yeah. There's a lot this book.
Which is why I liked it, because I thought it was just so deep. I thought so much about this book.
Yeah.
But.
So the people of the internet agree with you. They generally like this book. Goodreads overall 4.2 out of 5, and Amazon overall 4.4 out of 5 stars. So thoughts on those reviews? I feel like that's pretty on par.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I do too. It's definitely not a perfect book, but I think I enjoyed it a lot. So
yeah, we just said there's a lot in it. So
yeah,
a little something for everyone.
I honestly think it's like a good book to like require for high school students, like a senior book. I think it would be a good identity book to touch on.
Yes and no, just because it is fictional. I don't know.
It's fictional, but it touches on real experience. And I'm sure there are people in this country, and I guarantee there's towns that were much like Mallard in Louisiana.
Well, we definitely didn't learn about those in school, so.
Which is why we probably need that perspective in schools.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great book just because you could pick so many different things to discuss. Of course, our education system is not currently at a point where people are like loving that.
Yeah, this one would probably fall under the people who hate, quote, critical race theory.
Yeah.
That not really being, because there are Black people and LGBTQ people, a lot of people probably don't want this book in a school.
Right. And it is very adult. I don't think it's too adult for high school, but I think it's adult enough that a lot of people would like.
I mean, to be fair, I read The Color Purple senior year of high school. That one's more adult than this.
Right. I also read The Handmaid's Tale, which is like, has some pretty graphic, like, sexual assault and
is Missouri. We read like The Hunger Games. That doesn't happen here.
Okay, well, my Dallas education and Catherine's Austin education were more progressive, apparently. But anyway, our first discussion question always is, you know, is it more plot driven or character driven?
Oof, this one's hard.
It's hard because it jumps between characters.
Right. There's like three different.
They're like all family. So I don't know.
But there's not like a plot point to like stick the story to go further.
I say character driven just because it was very much like every character. It was like their life, and it was just sort of about them making choices. You know, the biggest tension point, which this isn't a spoiler, I'm pretty sure it's on the back of the book, is when one of the twins decides to like cut off her past from her, like, you know, African-American heritage and roots and become a white woman, basically. And that's like that's a choice, like based on her character development. And most of the book is watching how that impacts them. So I guess that's kind of character and plot. I don't know.
I see where you're going, and I think I agree.
Yeah, I think that's character, because it's not a plot point. It's her own choice as a character development to pass as a white woman in society and keep her heritage a secret from the rest of her family.
Well, like you've both said already, it's a book about identity. So I guess that alone kind of points towards character. Also, there's not a huge plot in the sense that there's a huge, like, rise and fall climax point, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm set on character.
Okay, me too.
Me three.
We convinced each other.
Yeah. Group discussion. This is why we talk about it.
And have you read any other books by the author? I honestly don't know if they have any other books.
I do not know.
Nothing a little Google search can't tell me.
Yeah.
But so I have not.
Like none of us have read another book by this author.
Yeah. I feel like Catherine is like our resident Googler. So I'll wait for her to figure it out.
Hold, please.
Just pop up Goodreads.
Indeed. She's written The Mothers. Oh, and she wrote an American Girl doll story.
Oh, cute.
Oh. The
2022 American Girl doll, Claudie.
Okay.
So she's written a couple other books.
I kind of forgot they were still making American Girl dolls in their books, but okay.
Yeah, I did start with American Girl doll number one, Felicity. I read her book.
I started with Samantha.
I had Kitten Kirsten.
Aw.
Cute. I didn't actually own any, but
that's a travesty.
I know. My mom was like, no.
Yeah.
I was very jealous. Okay. Anyway, so no, we haven't read any of their other books. How was the pacing of the book? I feel like this is sort of the novel's weakness, is that it's a little bit of a winding tale, which I still really liked it, and I was really engaged in the story that was going on. But it, for me, the weakness was the pacing.
I would agree. I already said I didn't really find like a climax point in the plot line, which, you know, they teach you in elementary school, like the climax, that's how a plot works. So I also kind of think it was just kind of wandering through time and familial drama.
I will say, so, I mean, I'm the weirdo who reads a book in a day. I read this book in a day. I started the first chapter a month beforehand, and then didn't get into it until one day when I read the whole thing. But like when I would put it down to break from reading, I wanted to immediately get back into it because I wanted to know more about each character's story. So maybe that I'm different from y'all, but I felt like the pacing was really good because I was invested in all of the character stories, not just one specific storyline. I liked all of the storylines.
I agree that I liked all of the storylines. I'm not sure I was dying to know what was happening next. Like, that's not what kept me picking it up. I don't know. I think they were interesting, but there was a lot of like unnecessary wandering details sometimes. And I think this took me like 2 weeks to read.
Oh, it did not take me that long. I think it probably took me 4 days. I read it while traveling, though. So, like, I started it when I started traveling and finished it when I finished traveling. But I always kept picking it back up because I was really invested in the storylines. And like you guys said, I liked them all. So I didn't think that it was a big issue for me. But, like, when I compare it to a book that's a lot more action-packed, like, you know, the ACOTAR series, it's not the same sort of like, oh, like I have to read what's happening next because there's like action currently happening. It was much more like I just liked reading it. And so I kept going.
Well, I will say something that this book has that a lot of books can't claim to have is good enough character development that all of the characters that you're getting points of view from, you actually like. So like the guest list is where, that's where I knocked the guest list from our previous episode, is that there were points of views that I really wanted to skip, where I just really just wanted to get back to another person's point of view. I liked some more than others. All of these points of views felt like a flow that made sense, and I wanted to read all of them, which I think is pretty remarkable for a book that changes point of view so frequently.
And yes, the point of views were interesting, but when they switched, it was very abrupt, and it wasn't like they like jumped back and forth between chapters. It was like a whole new third of the book. And I don't know, that kind of made me angry. I was like, let me jump back and forth so I can keep reading about all of them. So I think that's part of the reason I think I was a little frustrated with that because I'm used to when it changes perspectives, you get back to the other perspective fairly quickly. And that was not the case in this book.
That didn't bother me a ton. I feel like this book is just very like, you know, that's like the style now, you know, it's this sort of like new wave, like how to write, like kind of thing. And I actually liked it. I think it's a book that combines so many characters, but they all feel different. They're all interesting. Even if they're not all likable, like you get to understand their decisions so well, even when they're making really complicated decisions, that I didn't really mind the character flipping, but that was just me.
Yeah. I didn't mind it. I just wanted it to flip more often.
Okay with going more in depth about certain points of the story, because like with the character flipping, it allowed for specific points of time to be fleshed out from that character's perspective and like give a really nuanced approach. I mean, I really didn't feel like any sort of whiplash, which normally I do with these kind of characters' perspective switches. So I guess that was something different I experienced than Caitlin, but I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, this is a unique book, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I've read anything super similar to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, are you going to watch the adapted TV series?
Most definitely. I love HBO Limited series.
I'm really curious to see how they translate this story because it is so intergenerational. Like, I can't wait to see what the cast list is. I can't wait to see how they actually turn this into a TV show. I feel like it could actually be a really intriguing watch.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not, like, I'll watch it. I don't know if I'm, like, anxiously awaiting for it to drop, you know, but, like, it would definitely be something I'd be interested in picking up in my free time.
Yeah.
Oh, when yeah, I'm not no, reading I'm not. For this podcast.
I'm not like anxiously awaiting it, but like for sure when it comes out, I'm going to binge watch it. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do the time jumps as well. Like, how are they going to storyboard and storyline these episodes?
I'm always very interested because TV, you normally think of like very traditional plot, like rising action, rising tension, climax, you know, and then TV shows will keep doing that every season and movies will just have one. But this is a, you know, a book that doesn't really do that like very traditional structure. So I'm very interested to see how they like adapt that to a TV show.
For sure.
All right. So what are your star ratings?
I am going to give it a 5-star.
High praise from Miss Casey.
I really liked it. I mean, it made me think more than I think any book has that I've maybe even read as like post graduating college. So,
okay, this is 2 weeks in a row. Casey, are you ready? You gave it a 5, and I'm giving it a 3.
I was like, this is gonna be a trend now.
The same reason as Aristotle and Dante. I just don't do well with like the kind of wandering plot line thing. I did really like the book. It just like A, had no good resolution at the end, and B, was kind of wandering the whole time, and that just really didn't, I don't know, that's the 2 stars that are missing for me. But yes, it made me think a lot, and I am glad I read it.
Well, for the second week in a row, I'm gonna agree with Casey. It's a 5-star for me. So it's about to be another showdown. Catherine Casey versus Caitlin.
I did like this one more than the last one, so it's not going to be.
Okay.
I was just like, okay.
Thank goodness. Though I'm not, Aristotle and Dante, I'm also very passionately like love. This book I loved, but not to the same degree. So.
Yeah. Same.
This one was a little less heartwarming.
Yes. It's
a little more difficult.
And I get what you're saying about the ending. I kind of liked it because it felt like that's life.
Yeah.
But when I read reviews for it, a lot of people mentioned the ending. And I also like definitely see that perspective of there's not like a huge payoff. It's just kind of less. Over. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah.
It really just ends.
Yeah, and I just don't like sitting there afterwards thinking about what's next and knowing there's not a second book.
But I think that's the beauty of this book is that
probably,
you
but I didn't appreciate it correctly.
Okay. Well, then what's your busy girl reading, Caitlin?
Three. I don't know. Like I said, it took me like 2 weeks to read because I was busy. I was reading other books also. And because it was such a meandering plotline, I didn't feel like I was missing anything if I didn't pick it back up right away. So I think it fit into my schedule when I needed it to. And like I said, I'm glad I read it, but I wouldn't like sit down and read it in a day like Catherine did.
I'm also psychotic.
Yeah.
Valid.
Valid for sure. I'll probably lower mine 1 star to a 4 star busy girl rating. I loved it. And I'm so glad I read it. Again, it made me think so much. It's like a very unique perspective. I think there's really no other book that like gives you this kind of story. So I think there is a lot of value in making time for it. But again, you know, I can see how the pacing would be hard. I can also see if you have to put it down and pick it back up because there's so many characters. I can see it being a little overwhelming depending on how long in between you're picking it down and putting it back up. So that's why I'm going to knock it 1 star.
Picking it down and putting it back up.
What did I say?
Oh, putting it back up, picking it back up.
You know what I meant. Carry on.
I know what you meant. It just made me stop. I was like, Yep. Okay. Yep.
Wrong verb, but it's fine.
I liked it.
I'm a reader, not a talker.
Good Ooh. Thing we have a podcast. I think I'm between a 3 and a 4 star only because I think you need to block out time for this book just to like reflect a bit. It's a book that makes you think. And if you're in a hurry or if you have other things on your mind, it's not really one of those books that's like you can just easily like read like candy. Like it's more of like thought provoking.
Yeah. Also, if you are having a hard time in your life, just don't read this book until you're having a better time because it's just not uplifting enough that you should read it when you're already sad.
I would also say like I think it was great perspective for me as a straight white woman. There's a lot of experiences in this book that I have not lived and could like read about and learn about. But like it may be different if you are have a similar story to who you're reading about.
Right. Yeah, which is why I loved it because it was so eye-opening, you know, so different from my lived experience. But yeah, not a candy uplifting read. So
kind of a downer.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah. In a very high quality way. Okay.
I want to skip the favorite character question because I feel like we just need to discuss that within the spoiler section since it's so hard to jump between the generations.
Yeah, from everything.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're on the same page. So let's go ahead and spoiler alert now. And then we can talk about that.
Okay.
Well, spoiler alert, y'all. It's time for that. We need to get into the deep dives and deep discussion because there's a lot we're not saying right now because there's a lot to get into.
It's painful. It's painful how much we're not saying. Go read the book and then come back.
Please.
Or stick around for just probably what's going to be a very good thought-provoking discussion, I guess.
Spoil a TV show for yourself.
If we are as deep and thoughtful as this book, then it will be a nice discussion. If not, we have failed this offer.
Oh, geez.
Period. Yeah. All right. Well, first question. The sort of first perspective you get in the book is Desiree and Stella, who are twins. They live in Mallard, which is a small town that basically, because of segregation and, you know, blah, blah, blah history, It only had Black people living there, but over time, via colorism, this sort of like many of the people who lived there became white passing. But everyone around the town of Mallard knew that those people were, you know, quote unquote Black, even though they would be white passing too.
And these people frowned on dark skinned Black people. Yeah. They were almost racist, but not racist. It was a very strange.
It's colorist. Yeah. It's very much like South Africa during apartheid is my best like comparison.
Right. It was kind of shameful to try and go out in the world and live as a white person, but also shameful to like mingle with dark skinned Black people.
Yes.
That's and why also, I said this was kind of a, I think, a niche Black experience in that time period.
Yeah.
Right. And also it's written during a time period where if you presented as white and then people found out that you were actually had African American heritage, you were going to be in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of stakes to that experience.
And even then, both the twins witnessed their father's murder because of situations with white people being mad at him. I never fully understood totally why he was killed, but it seemed like it was a race.
That's because they didn't totally understand why he was killed. But yeah, it was kind of confusing and sad. And
it was a racist lynching is what it was.
Right. And Desiree and Stella are both very light skinned. So they have sort of, you know, prestigious place in the hierarchy of Mallard. And they're just trying to survive. They hate Mallard and they want to escape.
When they were like descended from the founder of this colorist town. So people held them up as like the crown jewels of Mallard. And they were both like, heck no.
Right. So our first question is about them and, you know, what impact the town had on the lives of the twins, which I think is basically just like there was so much internalized by them based on race, because race was very important in Mallard and it was obviously also very important in like the wider America. And so it just changed a lot about how they thought about themselves, I think.
And I think they were also in a bubble because, you know, the people of Mallard didn't really associate with white people or with other Black people. So they kind of grew up in this little bubble and wanted to see the world outside.
Right.
And, like you said, internalize that anger of kind of being in this secluded little town.
Right. And I would probably even argue that, like, the decision that Stella ultimately makes to present as white probably wouldn't have happened without her upbringing in Mallard, because, you know, colorism and race was already so important within her family.
Yeah. She wanted the job and wanted the income to help her and her sister out in New Orleans, so she passed as white. But then the decision to continue passing as white was because of like this internalized racism and colorism, and thinking that she could get a better life as a white person in America than as a Black woman in America.
Yeah, I mean, and you can see it in the novel, is like then she understands what it feels like to be privileged and to like feel the entitlement and the safety of being a white woman as opposed to being a Black woman. But then it leads her into this life that
is a lie.
Yeah, is a lie and is very stressful for her.
Because she's always afraid of being found out with other people of her same race or in general, which
is scary. She's white passing enough that she ends up having like a blonde hair, blue eyed daughter. And that adds this whole other thing. Like, she doesn't want her daughter to know her true identity because she wants her daughter to preserve her own identity. So it's like passed down from her to her daughter.
And she doesn't want her daughter to deal with the stress of the lie that she has built for herself.
And it forced her to totally abandon her family and put her in this very complicated situation of acting racist herself to fit in with white people and accepting and observing the racism of her neighbors and of her daughter and all of these things that had to have been, you know, incredibly painful.
Yeah. But then on the opposite side, Desiree, because she was so outspoken and so against the town from the beginning, it was almost like a polar opposite of Stella. So she kind of leaned more into Black culture and like ended up marrying a Black man from DC, and having a very dark skinned daughter, so that when she comes back to Mallard early in the book, her daughter experiences a lot of colorism from the town people because of her decisions, I guess is the best way to put that.
Yeah, they very harshly judge her for choosing to be with a dark-skinned man, and therefore, like, very harshly judge her dark-skinned daughter.
Right, which... neither girl wants to be this kind of in-between limbo skin color, because they don't have a place to fit in society very well. They just both tip off opposite sides of the scale, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.
Because it's not only opposite sides of the scale when it comes to passing or being a Black woman in America, it's also economic. One becomes a really rich white lady in the suburbs of Los Angeles, and the other goes back to her hometown and is a waitress at a diner making ends meet and living in her mother's house. So it's very different economic backgrounds.
But one is ultimately very happy and one is not.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like was so fascinating, was watching like the twin who chose to be authentic and to sort of always maintain at least what she saw as her authentic self, and how that led her life to be like economically a life of struggle and definitely not a life of privilege. But then Stella has this life of, you know, material privilege and possession and status in society, but spends every day unhappy, anxious, keeping secrets and lying to the people around her and shunning the people who actually love her, which is so sad.
And like, it's hard because I don't think Blake, her husband, was ever like a bad guy, but like, he doesn't know the true her. And she's so afraid that if he ever found out, that he would leave her or he would do something bad to her.
Which, like, I don't know, from the way they described his character, which granted wasn't as detailed as some of the other characters, I'm not sure he would have left her. But that fear she's living with and the fear for her daughter is very interesting.
But he did really push her, ultimately it didn't work, to be more of a housewife.
Yeah, and she's a trophy wife.
And he was not okay with her becoming a professor later on.
That is true. If anything, he's not as much racist as he is sexist.
Yeah. Another layer.
Yeah. Which, side note, it's not lighthearted, but it's more on like the lighthearted side as opposed to the hardcore like racism side. But the way all the white men in the neighborhood are like trying to buddy up to like the Black superstars, like, kind of made me laugh. It was like one of the funnier points where they're like all trying to like be cool and like be there.
We don't want you here. Oh wait, you're a rich movie star.
Well, yeah, like dropping their catchphrase, like trying to act like they're all like buddies.
Right. I could get a really good picture of like Hollywood in this period from the way this section of the book was written and Stella's life was written. It was really interesting.
So back to the sort of beginning of the novel. We kind of briefly mentioned it before, but the twins witnessed this brutal lynching of their father. How did you feel like that impacted both of the twins differently?
Yeah, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but because they were kind of polar opposite, Desiree was more of the outspoken one and kind of spoke for Stella at times. Stella internalized a lot of her trauma. And I guess, like, I would love to hear y'all's perspective, honestly, because I found it interesting that she wanted to be white passing after she witnessed, like, white people murder her father. Like, it seemed like, why would you want to be a part of that society? Like, that was a thought that popped into my head while reading her perspective, where I was like, I wouldn't really want to be associated with these people. Or that may be adding on to a level of her fear.
I was going to say, I feel like it's different, just motivating factors. Like, I think her fear is motivating her to want to be white and not have to experience that ever again. Where, I mean, I think for Desiree, it's kind of her indignation that's fueling her. Hard words at night. and causing her to want to embrace it because she sees the injustice.
Right.
I don't know. Very different reactions. Very different, yeah. You know, fight or flight, I think, mm-hmm. that plays out here.
Yeah, I completely agree with your interpretation. I think that's a really good way to say it, of the fear versus the indignation causing them to really drive in opposite ways. And there are even scenes when Stella says that she wakes up from nightmares imagining that her husband's hands are the hands of the white men who lynched her father. And it's like, wow, I mean, that's really brutal. But clearly it's, you know, still in her mind. Like, she knows that she's become part of the oppressor, basically. Yeah. And Desiree has just chosen the complete opposite path.
Yeah, it just brings into the point of like that generational trauma and like how this town and the system that they grew up in traumatized them, witnessing this because of systemic racism, trauma, and then that gets passed on to their kids almost in different ways. And it's just, it's really interesting.
Which I think is part of what makes all the characters so sympathetic. Because there's not really a villain in the form of a human in the novel. It's more just like racism, classism, you know, discrimination,
sexism.
All the isms are like the villain, but there's not like one person who's the villain. And all the characters, you know, even Stella, when she's making these really complicated choices, you don't ever really hate her, or at least I didn't. You know, you can understand why she's making the choices she's making, which I really admire that the author could create characters that you understand and almost like respect, even if you don't agree or you can see how it's like harming them.
Right. I think their villains are almost like their internal dialogue, their internal thoughts. And I think that's why this book's so interesting, is because like most of us live normal lives and don't have like a villain in our life after us. You know, it's societal pressures and our own thoughts that are fueling our inner fears. So I think that's probably why this was a really interesting read, because it was really more human than dramatized life.
Right. I completely agree, which is also why the ending is just like, well.
Yeah, that's life.
I didn't dislike the ending, though. I liked kind of like the quiet ending in a river.
I liked it too, but it definitely doesn't lighten any of the blows, you know?
It was not the satisfactory feeling I needed at the end. It was like, I get it. You're supposed to keep thinking about this kind of stuff, but I needed a little satisfaction at the end.
We fixed all the world's problems.
You know, if they would just like hug and be friends, I would have loved that.
Oh my gosh. The most like heart-wrenching scene for me, I think, is when Stella goes back, and I wanted so badly for there to be some sort of reconciliation, yes. Some sort of like sister bonding, sister acknowledgement, like reading that scene where she completely fully rejects Desiree and their life again. Yeah.
And tells her daughter to stop hanging out with her cousin that she's found. Yes. Like, excuse me?
It like brought me to my knees. Like, as a reader, that scene is probably the hardest part to read. Like, among all the brutality and all the horrible things that happen, it just hurt so bad.
Because they had grown apart so much that she like could not accept the life that
Desiree was willing. It was all...
Yes. All Desiree still loved her. Desiree never understood why, and why she was cut off from her and missed her whole life, which makes it even worse that
And Stella, that's the thing, like, is she's never going to understand why, and that's why I was unsatisfied.
Like, yeah, I was very mad at Stella to just up and leave without saying goodbye, and then we never get another goodbye.
It's so realistic. That's why it's so brutal, is it's like, mm-hmm. The author just refuses to give you that like feel-good happy ending. She's like, no, I guess who these characters are.
Technically, the feel-good part of the ending is between Kennedy and Jude, their daughters, and forming that relationship, and that they keep staying in touch despite their mothers.
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of.
Honestly, the happiest ending is Reese. God bless him.
Yes. Love him. Oh my gosh. The one like beautiful, happy storyline in this novel is Reese.
I mean, he did have a brutal storyline, though.
Yeah, but he actually gets a happy little resolution.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing, no one else really does.
Yeah, nothing horrible happens to them. They just love each other and have like a beautiful relationship.
Right. Reese gets top surgery in the 80s. Like, that is the happiest ending someone in that situation could hope for.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting. Like, Jude leaving for college, she moves from Mallard to UCLA on a track scholarship, and then meets Reese, who is a transgender man in the 70s, 80s in California, hiding it, taking steroids off the street to boost his testosterone, which is horrible. And at one point, he was performing sexual favors to get money. And like, it was just not great. And then they meet, and I don't want to say that like Jude saved him, because that's not the case, but like his life got better because he had love in his life, and that
they really
Jude was
saved
giving
each other.
Yeah, they saved each other.
They were like
super improbable relationship. This girl who's never been outside of this quirky little colorist town meeting the transgender boy from Arkansas in California on a track scholarship to UCLA, where it's still not super common to have a girls be black girls. Like, very interesting little chance meeting.
Absolutely. But I personally, Jude is my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved how they sort of bonded over that feeling of never really fitting in, like Jude being so dark-skinned, and especially after having grown up in Mallard, basically, always feeling like very bad about her appearance, and really just, you know, all the issues that come with being pushed to the outskirts of like your own social group. And then Reese had kind of felt that in a different way, and it was just, I loved them.
Yeah, they were just like a very grown-up relationship of pure love, and that you felt that they could get through any challenge that life threw at them.
With the help of some drag queens.
I love the drag queens too.
Always with the help of drag queens.
That's what every book needs, is some drag queens.
Just sprinkle in the drag queens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So our next talking point, how do you think Stella was able to actually pass as a white woman for so long? And, you know, the book sort of, you know, leaves it an ambiguous point. I was fairly convinced that Stella would never tell anyone if she could help it about her true heritage. But do you think she'll ever come clean? Do you think she'll ever tell her husband? What do y'all think?
I don't think she'll ever truly come clean unless she gets outed.
Yeah. If her daughter outs her.
If you'll reject your twin sister to her face, I think you're taking it to the grave.
Mm-hmm. When I, on the first part of that question, I don't think she would have been able to be white passing for so long if she hadn't immediately formed a relationship with a very wealthy white man. So mm-hmm. she's in this echelon of white society where she's not really around colored people at all. So there's no one to out her necessarily.
Yeah, he gives her credibility. She, through him, she becomes part of like a unquestionable, almost like untouchable part of society. And so from that perspective, she doesn't really have to worry.
That's why she's so afraid of the black woman moving into her rich white neighborhood, because there's finally someone who might, you know, recognize that she is not all white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she treats that woman and says some pretty terrible racist things in order to pass, or to make sure that that woman doesn't get to move into town, which
was sad. I loved that character. She was fabulous.
Yeah.
I know. It was one of my favorite parts of the book, which sounds weird because it does not paint Stella in a good light at all. But because it was just so complicated, and you can really can see all her tension and worries about the choices that she's made come to a head, and like all the choices she was making about how she never really felt safe with white people, you know, with her black neighbors, those were the only people she could really relax with, but she felt so threatened that she could only be their friend behind closed doors, and it was just so tense.
Right. You it teased like maybe this woman would help Stella come to terms with her actual heritage, but then Stella drops the N-word and runs that, so.
Mm-hmm. And with her daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. So well, where there could have been a happy ending. Nope.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could have been a good relationship there. But speaking of relationships, because we've talked about kind of Jude and Reese's, but the other relationships in the book were also Desiree and Early's relationship, and I guess Desiree and her first husband Sam's relationship, as well as Stella and Blake's. What do you think of like each of those relationships and like how they juxtapose each other in ways?
Early was my favorite character.
Oh, I love that we all have different favorites this time, but I love y'all's choices. I support all of them. I loved Early too.
Mm-hmm. He was just so supportive. I liked that. She needed that, and there was no strings attached. Like, they didn't mm-hmm. have to be married. They were just happy.
That's what he was so gentle, and I think that was so beautiful considering her first marriage, which was so violent. It was really sweet to see that relationship.
And yeah. how he treated her mom and Jude. It was just, yeah. I loved him.
He was like a father to Jude, even if Jude didn't want a father figure.
Yeah,
and
he's like, I'll do it, god damn it.
Yeah, and like it's so interesting because Desiree really needed someone that could be okay with not marrying because she had such a terrible and traumatic first marriage that was super abusive. So she needed kind of that relationship that Early was willing to give her. And then like I found it so interesting when she was telling Jude and Reese like, oh, when are you gonna get married? And it's like, well, you're one to talk. And of course, there's actually reasons why Jude and Reese couldn't get married legally is because they would have to change Reese's birth certificate.
No, and so then she goes beyond when you're getting married to, well, can I have at least have grandkids? And that was really sad.
I know. They were like, ha, ha, ha. Unfortunately, I'm never going to
adopt
that.
Some.
Yeah. Well, in the 80s, probably not.
Well, yeah.
Probably not allowed.
Mm. Probably not a legal adoption. They could probably find some ragtag children to take in, I hope.
The doctor.
Yeah.
He's going to be a doctor.
I know. I know. I'm so proud of her. I think that's why she was my favorite, is she just really pushed through everything and became so successful. I was really cheering for Jude the entire time.
It's kind of sad, though, because she was so successful because she just kind of gave up on other people. Like, no one in Mallard liked her except her mom, so she just kind of was okay with that and lived her life, and that helped her succeed, but it was kind of sad too because she was sort of isolated.
I know.
Until she met Reese.
That's why Reese was so great, is because he ended this feeling, this period of isolation and aloneness and unlovableness.
Yeah, and she had like a good group of friends with the drag queens and Reese.
And right. Sort of Kennedy by the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, trying. Kennedy in progress. Okay. So to comment then on Stella and Blake, my only real thought is, you know, Blake was a decent guy, but their relationship was built on lies and it showed. There was very little true intimacy, and you can't like really love someone or have those feelings for them if you're lying to them. So
I really
because of that,
wasn't
their daughter sucked.
Yeah, I really yeah. wasn't expecting a point of view from him, but there were a couple of moments where we shifted into his point of view, which was I found very interesting. Of like, he was like, I always knew she was mysterious and really quiet, and I thought like, as we got older or as we matured in our relationship, I would learn more. And he was like, I just haven't really learned much, and like we obviously know why as the reader. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I found that really fascinating, like to get into his mindset.
I found it fascinating how okay he was with it being a mystery.
Yeah.
Right. Which, so I loved that he was sort of a neutral character, because I feel like it added a lot of depth that he wasn't, you know, horrible. Like you could respect him even if he wasn't, you know, perfect. He was still a rich white guy. But I feel like it was just a time period. Like it had to have been, I personally could not believe he was not cheating on her because she offered him so little in the terms of, you know, real intimate love because she couldn't, because she was lying. And I was like, it's honestly shocking that this relationship presents as healthy as it is.
I mean, that's a period where he was just trying to, you know, grip that American dream and
yeah.
have a solid family and a good career and make money. So I think he was successful in every area he probably was raised to want to be successful in.
Right. It was a marriage of like good enough and not a marriage of like true depth, which is what we now right. sort of look for. But
it achieved what he needed.
Yeah.
What he wanted.
Yeah. Also, I found it interesting, Stella's commentary of like, originally our love story was like really cute, but then like as it aged, it like grew sour about the idea of her being his secretary and moving to the to Boston with him. Like a lot of it was problematic when you think about it in today's standards. But yeah. And even she commented on that as well, which I found very fascinating.
It does happen though.
Yeah. Not saying it doesn't happen, but
especially back then.
It's still problematic.
It is definitely problematic.
Just the watch Mad reason... Men and it's problematic.
Yeah. The only reason I could accept it is because she did like him. He was not a lot older than her. And back in the day, there weren't that many ways to meet people of the opposite sex. So it's like...
And he seemed genuinely interested in her, too. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't...
Very mutual.
And you always get the sense from him that he would have left her alone if she wanted to be left alone.
Yes. There was no weird power dynamic, but I don't know.
Yeah, if anything, he was just didn't want her to be a professor and stuff. And that was mostly because he wanted it. He didn't want it to look like they had to have two incomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was just being a man. Yeah, eye roll. Definitely not progressive in today's sense of the word, but
it's yeah. not about the income, it's about her freedom, dude.
Yeah, exactly. So this book draws a lot of comparisons based on the choices of Desiree and Stella, and you know how that leads them to two extremely different relationships to their heritage. So what are sort of then the parallels and the differences between Jude and Kennedy because of those choices?
Again, another polar opposite, because Kennedy is, I want to say a white woman because she's basically a white woman because she didn't know that her mother right. was
she looks white and she's culturally yeah. white, even she if she know has that her mother heritage. Was
yeah mixed race black heritage,
and she doesn't know her heritage, so
no, so
yeah.
So she's like this rich girl, grew up with all of the privilege in the world, with two loving parents and in a household that could provide her whatever her heart desires in a nice area of California. And then Jude grew up poor, living in Mallard, Louisiana, after her mother left her father because her father was abusive and was bullied by everyone in the town for her skin color. So it's very, very different experiences in childhood, and they kind of like both of them go to college, but then Kennedy drops out to become an actress while Jude pushes really, really hard to become a doctor and to kind of advance in society in a way that's like what we would traditionally see, while Kennedy wanted to be more of like the actress, the soap actress, and then kind of comes up like she ends up being a realtor, which really makes sense for her. And I don't want to say like acting is not like the right path, because I don't think there is any true right path. But like when we think of the traditional American experience, it's like pull yourself up by your bootstraps and like go to college and become successful. So in that way, I guess Jude was more of the success story.
I think going off that and then going back to touch on when I said that like Stella's motivated by fear and Desiree is motivated by indignation, I think that fear breeds weakness in both Stella and her daughter. So there's just no motivation there. And then yeah. like the indignation breeds like boldness and a kind of unapologetic being yourself, getting what you want in life kind of thing.
Right. I know something I thought about with Stella and her daughter is that, you know, you get a few chapters from Kennedy. You get a few chapters from Kennedy's perspective and you realize that Stella also could not be vulnerable and truly in touch with and like, you know, intimate and like the mother-daughter bond with Kennedy also because of her secrets and her lies. Like, it's this wedge that drives them apart, and Kennedy knows it and is missing it and is like, why do you never talk to me? Why do you never tell me anything? And that's also something that I feel like reverberated through Kennedy's life, is feeling like she never got that attention and that love, which feeds in her to her desire to be an actor, to have attention. She was sort of like a bratty, snobby, self-obsessed girl. And part of that was her privilege. And I also felt like part of that was that hole of not having a really engaged mom.
Well, and even when she finds out her mom's secret, Stella still refuses to talk about it.
Yeah.
And so there's just like this wall that Kennedy cannot break down. So I understand why she lives a very unsatisfying life, because even when she knows the reason for it, there's still no resolution.
Right. Well, I agree that like indignation, boldness, this is who I am mindset that Desiree more so had, despite the struggles Jude went through, I feel like sort of empowered her to do better.
Yeah. I agree. Kind of already touched on this next one as well. So why do you think that Kennedy and Jude stay in touch even after everything goes down and Jude reveals to Kennedy that her mother is also her aunt?
I think it explained things for Kennedy. I think Kennedy always had that huge question mark of, why is my mom the way she is? Why are there all these gaps that don't make sense? And even though what Jude said, you know, if a stranger came up to you and said those things to you, you'd be like, you are fucking crazy. Like, you're lying. I think it probably did just make the pieces fall into place for Kennedy. And then she also kind of gained access to more family through that.
When I think, you know, blood is thicker than water. They're both these only children who grew up with mysterious mothers who wouldn't talk about their past a whole lot. And then they find each other and they're from the same sort of situation, just with different outcomes. And they realize they're family. And I think Kennedy would never admit it, but family is a big draw to have someone that relates to you.
Right. And they were both only children, I'm sure, you know. In a way, it's almost like that bringing back to like the twins and the siblings of like connecting the circle of, you know, needing someone to share your lived experience with. I felt like it sort of was like the completing the circle of like the broken family bond. Yeah. So we've kind of mentioned it a little bit, but just to tie it all together, what did you think about the ending?
I don't like it.
It's very real
and I applaud that. I know what you're going to say.
That's not what I was gonna say. I was gonna be more shallow. I just like that it ended with Jude and Reese, because two favorite characters, and that the fact that like he got his top surgery and like feels more comfortable taking off his, I mean, like, so they're in the middle of their Jude's grandmother's funeral. And they kind of, the town was like going to go and try to like see like, oh, look, the successory Jude, despite everything that the town did to her, was like, oh, we want to see how she's doing. But like, and see her boyfriend. But like, they kind of go off by themselves and go swim in a river. And that's how that kind of ends. But it's like that happiness and that quietness of them. She doesn't need the acceptance of the town, despite doing this amazing thing and becoming a doctor and getting into med school and having like a great boyfriend. They just could find that quiet in that moment and like they appreciate what they've been through.
Okay. I also don't care about the acceptance of the town, but I wanted to know if they lived happily ever after and got to build a family and stayed in touch with Kennedy and all that. Well, so
you
kind of
get that throughout the book, because it's time jumped, and there's time jumps that jump to the future past the ending of the novel. There are. I swear.
Yeah, there's that one where they're like all adults. I remember it. It's been a minute, so I could be wrong about this. I remember it focusing more on Jude and Kennedy, though, than how Jude was actually doing.
Right, I remember it was about Kennedy's career, kind of.
It was, but
I want
to hear that they stay in touch.
To know about every character and how they live their lives happily ever after.
Well, that's not realistic.
I don't read books for realistic things. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
It was very thought-provoking because it was so realistic. I just wanted a cute little ending. Because they all went through so much crap. I just wanted a happy ending.
I know. You do not get the light at the end of the tunnel. You get like a very complicated mess. But
a lot of tunnels at the end of the tunnel.
A quiet peace.
You do know that things go well for sort of Jude, who's, you know, the next generation and like my favorite character, and Kennedy kind of eventually gets it together. And so there's sort of like an onward march.
Does Jude have her mom move with her? Like, you kind of never hear if that actually, like, she ends up moving with Early. I want to know, you know.
They moved to Houston.
I just want to know how the family hangs in the future.
They moved to Houston Early.
I know, but I wanted Desiree and Jude to be together.
Yeah.
A sweet mother-daughter duo.
Okay.
They are. Well. All right. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, there you have it. Do you guys have any other suggestions based off of this novel? I've kind of already given one with The Color Purple. Very similar themes. Darker, a lot darker. So many trigger warnings. I can't even list all of them. But a classic novel that changed my perspective in high school as living in a very white community.
Less deep, but I have a TV recommendation. This Is Us.
Okay.
Very similar generation jump between family perspectives, kind of similar time period. Kind of moves from the 80s on instead of like the 50s to the 80s. But and there is some LGBTQ, there's some racism kind of perspectives and how that plays into the family dynamic. And I don't know. I feel like when they make this an HBO series, that's what I envision, is that kind of time jump between episodes and storytelling that you get from This Is Us.
I'm going to recommend a book called Three Women. It's nonfiction, but it's written in like a narrative style. And the author is a journalist who did a bunch of interviews with the same three women over the course of years. And then sort of wrote this like narrative style story about their lives. I don't believe it tackles race really, but it has a lot of similar themes about what does it mean to be a woman? What do the modern experiences of women look like? How are their relationships? And how does that sort of navigate the power structure that we live in? And so if you like that sort of deep structural, identity type novel, I would definitely recommend.
I will say I haven't read it yet. It's been on my TBR for a very long time. Passing by Nella Larson, which now that I'm pulling it back up and looking at it, the introduction is written by Britt Bennett, the author of this book. So I guess that affirms it. But that's been on my TBR for a long time. And it talks about kind of white passing black women also.
Nice. Oh, good job, guys. I think those are good recommendations.
I tried.
Maybe if we aren't reading a book a week, I'll have time to actually read that book.
I actually am all caught up for this year.
I just started Verity.
I think I have one more, yeah.
But all right. Thank you guys for hanging in with our discussion. We hope you liked it. Let us know what you thought of the book. Let us know if you disagree with us or which one of us you agree with the most or who you disagree with the most. We love hearing your opinions. That's why we love books and why we love discussions, is because everyone gets to have their own take.
This was a heavy one. We'll get back to the smut. Don't worry.
Yeah, we had to put another Sarah J. Maas ACOTAR novel right after this as kind of a little palate cleanser.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Not next week, but the week after will be a palate cleanser.
All right. And follow us on social. We are at Busy Girls Pod almost everywhere. You can also join our Goodreads discussion at Busy Girls Book Club Podcast.
Yeah, follow us on Instagram and you can see what episodes are coming up next.
And rate and review the podcast.
Please. Wherever you
we
listen.
We just desperately want to be liked, okay?
Why we created this. No, kidding.
Okay, well, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.